day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour, hosted by Priti Patel and Tracy Capstick. My name is Deborah, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key *0 on your phone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd just like to advise all parties that the conference is being recorded, and now I'd like to hand over to Priti. Thank you, Priti. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Deborah. Afternoon all, and welcome to the Safety Hour for the week. I just want to split the Safety Hour session into three. So just firstly, give you an update on how the period went for us in terms of harm, and then Tracy's going to talk you through our near-miss plan, and then we'll move on to the third item, which is just to give you an update on some of the safety initiatives that are happening at the minute, and just to bring you up to speed on those. Being period end this week, last week on Friday, so the numbers are just being finalised for period end, but I thought it would be useful just to give an update, and of course they'll all come through on the safety cascade, which will be issued this week also. So how have we done for accidents? So this period, we've had 15 accidents in the period, so it's fairly higher than usual period for us in terms of workforce harm. And what sort of accidents have we had? Well, they're not too dissimilar to what we normally have. We've just we had more of them. So we've continued to have slip, trips and fall accidents, generally trackside. We've also had a number of accidents involving small plant and equipment. So this is where we've had individuals injured whilst using a small hammer or a spanner, and then I've had a piece of kit come up and strike them. We've also had some road traffic accidents, but minor collisions with gateposts, minor collisions with a curb, and that's then resulted in workforce harm. We tend to have accidents around vegetation. So again, not dissimilar to previous periods. We've had people where there's been where they've sustained cuts from vegetation. And this period, the one that was quite unusual, we've had three instances of spider bites or wasp stings, and that's quite unusual. We don't tend to have them in previous periods, and it appreciates time of the year also, but there are three incidents of that case this period. So workforce accidents, higher than usual period. This period, three of those accidents of the 15 were so significant, which meant that the individuals couldn't return to work. And of course, all of those accidents are being investigated and the individuals cared for as part of the normal golden hour process. So how are we doing for close calls? So close calls, as you're all aware, and your teams are aware, is all about preventing these accidents from happening. It's preventing harm from occurring in the first instance. And so far, we've raised around 2,000 close calls, and that's cumulative, so up to the end of period six, around 2,000 close calls, which is fantastic, which means that we're spotting things before they could result in harm. What are the normal types of close calls? Again, shouldn't be any surprises for you and your teams when you talk through these. Generally around three key areas. So our close calls continue to be reported around conditions of the infrastructure. So things like inadequate truss lids, things like scrap rails not removed or in an inadequate location. We also have continue to have close calls around housekeeping. Generally, the housekeeping items is around overgrown vegetation, it's around rubbish, and it's generally around the two areas which should be the safest for our guys, and that's around the access points and the set. So they can continue to come up. And then the third area, which we continue to see with our close calls, is around security. So this is around open gates, open doors, unsecure buildings, and so they continue to show up. Again, this is great news. We're spotting them, we're reporting them, and it's fantastic. The key really, however, is to close them. So again, just talking to your teams about, is there something that can be done to make the close call safe real time? Because if we can try and close the close call or make it safe, it might not be in a perfect state. mistakes, but we could maybe cut back some of the vegetation or remove some of the tripping hazards at an access point. Real time, that's the sort of things that we should be encouraging, and that's what will really prevent the harm from occurring. So good news, Paris Cordia continuing to report them, challenges around closing them real time. Also, we only get a very small number of behavioural closed calls. So this is things like spotting an unsafe act or something that could cause harm, which isn't a asset condition. So things, we do get some, we don't get that many, but the ones that we generally have had is around safe system of work, packs not being adequate, safe system of work not being briefed. We've had some where PPE isn't being worn. So again, encourage your team to spot these. And the behavioural ones are fantastic in that they can be addressed straight away. So if there's a member of your team that raises a behavioural close call, 9 out of 10 times it can be addressed before it results in harm. But we need to know about these so we can learn from them and understand what the common trends are and see whether we need to do something wider as a route. And so close calls being raised, great news in terms of unsafe conditions. We could be able to do more around unsafe behaviours. So how are we doing in terms of closures? So again, most of you that are delivering the safety hours to your team will be responsible managers. They're responsible for closing the close calls, and you're doing well. 75% of our close calls are closed in 90 days. That's great news. It's just shy of our aspiration. So our aspiration is to close 80% of our close calls in 90 days, and we're working through a number of things to support you to enable us to achieve our aspiration of 80%. How are we doing for close calls greater than 28 days? We have just under 500. So just under 500 close calls sitting in our work bank, which are over 28 days. And again, I know that many of you are working through to try and get those closed. Our aim for the end of the year is to try and get to 250. So we don't want any more than 250 close calls greater than 28 days. And that really is the challenge for us, because close calls are there to prevent harm. They can only stop harm from coming occurring once the close call has been addressed. The closure is just as important as raising them. So it's something to really just discuss with your team when talking about safety hours. And also just remember, when you do close the close call, the risk may not be eliminated, and you may not be able to eliminate the risk, but you may be able to reduce the risk, and that is just as valid as eliminating the risk. So we had a close call that I was involved in a few weeks ago with some spikes sticking up from the ground that caused an accident. And we were waiting for those spikes to be removed. So they weren't removed because we booked them in, planned them to remove them. What in that period of time when the close call was reported to when they were removed, we had an accident and somebody injured themselves. So we discussed what could we have done differently while we were waiting for that close call to be eliminated. And actually, one of the guys suggested, well, if they were painted up in white, we may have been able to see those spikes. And so that's about reducing risk while we wait for elimination. And the individuals and the teams went out and painted up these spikes, and that greatly improved the visibility of them. And hopefully that stopped another accident from occurring. But again, when you're talking to your teams about close calls, ask them about possible solutions and how you can reduce the risk in the interim whilst you wait for elimination. That's progress for accidents and close calls. We've also had another near miss on the route last week. So we had a spike of near miss events. We rolled out the stand down, the 10-day stand down, summarising the increase in near miss. And last week we had another near miss on the route. It was at 9 Elm, similar location to one of the near misses from the stand down. This was a team that were working on site. They were working near a set of points, and the train driver was on the up line and the team on the up line. However, the line blockage that they had was for the down line. Now, this is all subject to investigation, and we need to understand what's happened. But it is worrying for us. The number of near misses is increasing compared to last year. And we really need to understand why. We really need to understand what can we do. Are we doing the right things? So Tracy's going to, in a few minutes' time, talk through our near miss plan. What would be really useful to do is to share and communicate the near miss plan with your team. And if there's something that we've missed, is there something else that we need to do, let us know. Because we need to, this is about us as a group addressing near miss events. Near miss is a topic in our workshops, which are running at the minute. And again, the team are collecting feedback, collecting ideas as part of those workshops that we can feed into the overall route plan. So that just gives you a feel for harm, how we're getting on in terms of supporting and protecting our team. I'm going to hand over to Tracy. She's now just going to quickly talk through the near miss plan.
Good afternoon, Wessex. So, we have a plan to address the number of near misses and the rising trend of near misses for the last 18 months, 2 years. So, it's called the Man versus Train Plan, deliberately, so it's kind of personal. So, Man versus Train is the plan, and there are 5 elements to this plan. The 5 elements are called, named, communication, supervision and processes, risk and behavioural awareness, use of technology, and improved visibility. So I will take you through the steps of each of those 5 areas and a brief update on where we are with them. And I think perhaps we should post it on the Safety Hour forum after we've finished. So, communication. So, the communication element of the plan is not just about communicating near misses, but it's about raising and maintaining the profile of what I perceive to be the biggest risk on the route. So, there are 5 elements to this aspect. The first one is regular safety hour sessions and on aspects of safe track side working. Now, I've started this as soon as I walked through the door, and it's talking either in the safety hour on the safety brief about 019, the rule book, risk to staff, but primarily focused on man versus train and the risk associated. So that will continue, probably in perpetuity, to be honest, because it is a risk that doesn't go away in my world. Regular topics in the safety cascade. So although there is mention of near miss and associated incidents in the safety cascade, hopefully each one will have a slightly different take on it, so people don't get bored with exactly the same material coming at them. This period, I'm going to put in the 10-second challenge, because what we've discovered is, although you have to be in a place of safety more than 10 seconds before a train passes you, it's very difficult until you think about it to judge what 10 seconds is. And that isn't the course making calculations, that's members of the gang. So I'm going to issue the 10-second challenge, so everybody consciously experiences 10 seconds before the train passes. We've done the near miss safety stand down brief, and we've now passed it out to other areas of Network Rail. We're going to spend some time with section and line managers focusing on this aspect. Discussion forums, and we did run a couple of safety hours specifically for this, and that will come back again at regular intervals. The safety workshop that's going on today, and the other 3 of course, will focus on something called risk awareness. which everybody will go through when they attend the workshops. I've just sat in on the one in communication, and actually that kind of addresses the communication aspect, because some near-misses are as a result of misunderstanding or poor communication between different people, and it's not necessarily the signaller and the calls. Sometimes the communication is between other roles in the organisation. So that's communication and raising the raising and maintaining the profile of the risk of near miss, man versus train. So the second element is called improved supervision and process understanding. So bear with me on this one, because there are 9 elements to this. So the legislation of the land talks about supervision, and the way we discharge that legal obligation is safety conversations and PGSIs. And from the 22nd of August, there is a focus on PGSIs to be done on COSIS and their safe system of work pack, particularly red zone with the higher risk. All those, so everybody's been set the task of one per section per week. Those are being collated, lessons learned, but I think I'm going to put in the cascade a chart which denotes how many we are actually achieving across the piece. So that will ongo until at that rate until at least April next year, when we go into the new year. I wrote some guidelines, the Idiot's Guide to Being Able to Understand SAGS Pack, because unless you work with them closely every day, if you do an inspection of one, you wouldn't necessarily understand the nuances. So out there as well is the Idiot's Guide to Understanding a SAGS Pack. We need to pull the information in from these PGSIs, understand trends, and make some considered decisions as a result. So that will ongo as well. At the moment, Mr. John Dorey, safety advisor from Eastleigh, as was, is going to all the section managers across the route, having a look at their sites with their planners, checking the quality, checking the understanding, having a discussion about green and red zone working, and out of that, hopefully, we will pick up some information in which to help the section managers, the section planners, and ultimately the causes to have improved SAGS. So that's ongoing until at least the end of this period, so we can assess the information properly. Review of the Network Rail self-assurance process on this topic, and understand and trend review. So what John will do whilst he's out and about is look at self-assurance is an interesting thing, actually, because if you highlight you have a problem in your systems, you've then got to work out how to put it right. I don't think it's the best audit process or assurance process. So it is difficult, if you think you have a problem, to come up with the right solution. So we're hoping to help with that as well. Red zone, green zone review. Again, I've mentioned that before. John's looking at that. And we probably will need to work out some element of support to those sections that need more green zone availability. Introduction of... Right, so one of the other routes is introduce something called a red zone controller, and we want to look at whether that is the right thing to do for us. So it's almost like if you are working red zone, you put in an additional process for somebody to say, are you good to go? Does your sense reflect what you've got? Have you got enough resources? just so we're having that last thought process and last check of organisation before we go into red zone working. That's something I need to look at properly and potentially do a business case for. We have put in the hazard director the areas of the infrastructure where inexperienced staff, in brackets blue hatters, should not be working red zone. They existed. They existed in the safety passports, but we've now transferred those into the hazard directory. So we don't put inexperienced staff in locations that they really shouldn't be working until they are really okay with working trackside. And then we have to also do a review of whether we have all the red zone prohibited areas in the hazard directory. So that needs to take place over the next couple of months. Element number three is risk and behavioural awareness. Now, I mentioned it before on the Safety Hour, and the video was attached to the Safety Hour blog. And I've got some meetings to discuss this further with the director of Anglia, Helen Warnock, who has introduced risk-based commentary concept. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks we will know more about that and how to continue to bring that out into the REIT. Part of the Lost Time Injury Programme is something called Behavioural Improvement Programme, which Yanis is the project manager of. Yanis being a safety advisor in Buildings and Civils. So there is an Behavioural Improvement Programme to be rolled out in the future, and I think Yanis has started work on that. So we will know more about that in the next couple of months after further discussion. I've also put on here something called improved cost performance. Now, that is not to say that the majority of our causes are not good, because I would say most of our causes are very good. But we do need to do something to improve from where we are to minimise the risk of man versus train. The fourth element is use of technology, and James Marr, bless him, has done a fair amount of work on this. So this is the introduction of technology to support staff working on the infrastructure. So there's a Lewis program, and we have four sites, and that is a bit of kit that picks up messages from the signalling system and warns a group of track staff when they are working from the signalling system and the movement of trains, not man with flag. And the other one is the SatWise program. And I think it's on Thursday I'm going down to look at that at Leatherhead. So both of those are technological solutions. However, they will take a bit longer to kick in. I think Lewis won't be with us, and we are the trial route for that until May next year. And the last thing on that man versus train program is something called improved visibility. So what we've invested in is trialling some high-tech solutions for possession support staff, and that's at Wimbledon, Clapham and Feltham. So very, very high visibility blue hat, electroluminescence, and electroluminescence and LED on kits for Blockman. And it doesn't solve the problem, but what it does do is give at least 5 seconds more visibility to train drivers that there is a member of staff in their vicinity overnight while they're picking up and putting down blocks and straps. So that is the cunning plan. The last thing to mention, I suppose, is if anybody else has any ideas that could be considered for this RIS, then please come forward and let us know. Because although I think I have brought in as many aspects as I know about, I am not the fountain of all knowledge, other people will have some cracking ideas that we really need to consider as well. So, we will put it on the blog, but any better ideas, please pick up the phone and tell Pretty and I. Fantastic.
So, opportunity now for any questions on either the fixed performance or the near-man versus man plan.
Certainly, thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, to do this, simply key *1, record your name, and press the hash key. If you decide to withdraw the question, simply key *2. All your questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines remain on listen only. So *1, record your name, and press the hash key. Thank you. Nothing at the moment. A reminder, it's *1, record your name, and press the hash key. Thank you. And we do now have one. Thank you both. This comes from the line of?
Simon Crawford.
Thank you, Simon. You're live in the call.
Yeah, good afternoon. Only one quick one about the section manager or supervisor doing checks on the COSs on site. Do you need to have the skill set of a COS to assess another COS?
Right, okay. This is why I kind of divide. Like, what you need to do, Simon, is if you go onto the Wessex form, you can pull out a form I've specifically designed for a PGSI on a COS and a SOUTS plan. Now, do you need to be a competent COS to assess a COS? What are you looking at, really? Well, you're looking at whether the man or woman who is being a COS has got control of its group. You're looking at whether he is conveying information properly. You're looking at whether everybody understands that. If you read The Idiot's Guide to a SOUTS Pack, you will understand what a SOUTS Pack should reflect. So, I have never held a COS competence. Do I know when I'm in front of a good COS? Damn right I do, and I think you do as well. So it's not having to understand the intricacies of any competence to be a supervisor. It's about listening, learning, thinking, seeking advice if you need to. But no, you do not need the competence of a COS to check a COS.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you for that. There's no further questions waiting. Just a reminder, it's *1. Record your name and press the hash key. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. In that case, and I'll just do a quick summary of some of the initiatives that we have. And if anybody has any questions after or think of something after or something crops up while you're delivering your safety hours, then again, feel free to just drop us a note or call us. That's not a problem. So where are we in terms of some of the initiatives? I'm just conscious that there's quite a few safety initiatives happening at the minute, and it's just useful to let you know what those are. They will be included in the safety cascade as well, which will come out this week. So the first one is the online wellbeing survey. So it's we do once a year, we assess how healthy are we as a region. It's an opportunity to answer a survey. It also gives you your wellbeing age, and that survey came out today, and that's live, and you've got a few weeks to go through. And I'd really encourage your teams to complete that, because that helps to frame the plan for health activities on the route. So again, complete that, understand what your wellbeing age is. And we've got about a four-week window where that's open. That's the online wellbeing survey. The other thing is the National Health and Safety Week. So we've got a National Health and Safety Week starting on the 17th of October, and that runs until the 21st of October. The main principles of that is having that visibility out with the guys, doing some joint safety tours or some joint PGSIs with your local TU reps, and really showing that collaborative approach to safety. I sat down with all your area health and safety reps last week and challenged them all to set some dates up on that week and work collectively with you on how we can promote health and safety for National Health and Safety Week. That 17th to the 21st of October. And then the final thing is, of course, we've got our safety workshops, which are running at the minute. We held the Guildford workshop already last week. We're currently just running the Woking workshop. So if your teams haven't attended as yet, we've still got another opportunity at Southampton on the 11th of October and Portsmouth on the 19th of October. So again, I'd encourage you to get your guys booked on. And of course, if there's any opportunity for somebody to come on tonight, you can come on to Woking tonight as well. So there's still some more chances to send your guys to safety workshop. So that's all really. Just wanted to do a quick overview of what was happening on the route. If there's no further questions, we can end the safety hour.
Thank you. No, there's nothing further come through. Whether it needs a reminder, just in case, it's star one, record your name, and press the hash key. Thank you.
Brilliant then. Thank you very much, everyone, and have a good day. See ya.
Excellent. Thank you both. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and have a good day.